Hello and welcome to the Creative Consciousness Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are your hosts, Sam and Cabrini Greco, coming to you live from beautiful planet Earth. Throughout our conversation, we will be covering topics such as spirituality, global consciousness, metaphysics, and where you think we're truly headed. We have a great show to share with you today, so bookmark us and receive reminders. And you can visit our website at alltruenatural.com. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Creative Consciousness Radio Show. A big hello to everyone on planet Earth. Our intention for our show is to support individuals that are living a spiritually purposed life. Call in live to listen at 267-521-0151. We are bridging the gap in the spiritual community and the community at large. We're offering an event in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Check out our Bridging the Gap Spiritual Festival in Las Cruces, New Mexico, August 1st on our website, One Heart, One Love, One Spirit. org. There will be speakers, dancers, workshops, musicians, and vendors. I'm Sam Greco here with my lovely wife. I'll be doing the show this evening. And our guest tonight is Tom Carroll. I'll be reading a little bit of his biography, and we'll get on to the interview itself. All right, Tom has spent much of his life in a relentless search for the underlying meaning of the wisdom teachings. Working as a timber export broker and jewelry importer, Tom traveled the world for 20 years searching out teachers and spiritual exemplars. The result of this travel and research has been distilled into the articles that can be found on his website, sacredspace.org. That's sacredspace.org. The book, The Oracle, Guidance for Growing a Soul. As a friend of the order, Tom has trained for the past 15 years with Rinzai Zen lineage holder Junpo Dennis Kelly Roshi, founder of Hollow Bones, MondoZenHollowBones.org. Recognizing meditative training and perfectly compatible with injunctions found in Christian scripture, Tom practices Zen meditation, the Buddhist method of transformation, recognizing that by opening the heart, awakening, a person has fulfilled the seminal instruction to put on the mind of Christ. Tom Carroll laughs when speaking of his recent published book, We Often Write What We Need to Read. He says, The Oracle Guidance for Growing a Soul, 114 pages released by Sojourn Publishing, quoting from the book cover, the Oracle invites readers to experience their true self beyond an identity that feels separate from others, alone and often fearful. Explaining in his words, Tom said, the concept of fundamental union with others is nothing new. The problem is that there is no more than an idea to most of us. Tom continued, claiming that those who experience the truth of these words will see themselves and others differently. It's an experience, one that can never be forgotten or taken away. Okay, so what we're doing right now is we're waiting for Tom to get online here with us. We're experiencing difficulties again. So what I will do is I'll put us on break. He's a dear friend of ours from New Zealand, and he creates metal drums, and they're tuned at 432 hertz. What that does is it resonates more than regular tuned instruments. And you hear more of the harmonics, and we'll just have a listen to Jim Wafer's beautiful music. He also offers a book on this music, and he also sells his beautifully divine created instruments. We'll be right back, folks. All right, folks, it looks like we have Tom Carroll on the line here. Tom, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. We just went over your brief biography, and I'm really interested in your path, your earlier paths, and what got you to today.
Okay. I'm not sure where to start. Like so many many, but not enough. I've always had an interest in spiritual things. And as that matured over the years, I coupled that with a love of writing. And here we have this book in publication, The Oracle, Guidance for Growing a Soul. Now, I know that was brief.
So, yeah, that's
ask me some specific questions if you can.
Take us through your book writing. How does it happen for you? Is it any other type of thing that you can share with us regarding your relationship with your writing?
Sure. Well, the truth of writing, of being a good writer, let's say a successful writer, whatever success means to you, is that you have to just dig in and do it. Another writer put it, it's like ditch digging. You have to stick your shovel in the ground and move dirt. Sometimes, though, we're blessed to have something jump out at you and sort of write itself. That's what happens with the Oracle. As I explained, I'm not sure if that was in the bio or not, but I wrote that book as a Christmas gift for my niece. I was thinking about gifts, couldn't come up with anything that she wanted or didn't already have. And it's been long enough ago, I can't remember the blow-by-blow details, but this book came to mind and began to write it, and essentially it wrote itself in a couple of days.
Wow.
However, it took another 7 years to refine it. Really what happened was I grew up into some of the content, the reality of the things that I was speaking about, gave the book more granularity, need more traction with the subject. And then, of course, anybody who's been involved in book writing on to publishing realizes that it can take at least a year, if not two, to work your way through the editing process and everything else that's required. So the book was formally released, available on Amazon.com this past October.
I like how I'm reading a little bit more of your biography, and it says that you rewrote your book several times before you could reduce it to a level that felt right. That's, and in your quote it says that's why it's so short. I really resonate to that, because there is an absolute simplicity to spirituality, and so basically it took you several times to write this book, and you reduced it to that short level. Did that happen with the process you were talking about with discovering yourself and growing into yourself? Was that happening?
Well,
as a parallel
that
time?
That was, if I understand your question, that was the process. A lot of what was written was simply rewritten, refined, so that the ideas flowed, had a greater degree of accuracy in them, in the way things were phrased and what was actually said. And then, of course, some pages were added completely new. The introduction, there's a page in there about beginning well, and several other things were, I just simply recognized that I needed to explain the format of the book. You may or may not have seen, did you get the, I believe I sent you a PDF, and in looking at that, you'll see what look to be almost blank pages. I call them the watermark pages, and readers are invited to actually write directly on that, on those pages, so the text is grayed out. But I wanted people to understand why, and the book is written in oversized letters, like a children's book. And in the introduction, I explain that that's to help people relax. Wanted people to not take this, not take themselves really seriously. This whole business of spirituality and waking up, it's been written about, talked about. We've gone over it and back and forth through it, for
yes,
centuries and millennia. So this was supposed to be different. The idea is to encourage people to actually engage, to do their work. In the preface, I explain the difference between translational religious practices, where, that's more traditional church, where you go and you listen to or discuss with others scripture and find your place in that. You position yourself according to scriptural dictates, and hopefully come to a place where you feel like you're on track and doing better and more comfortable. But there comes a time when you begin to realize that what this is really about is a radical transformation of being.
Mm-hmm.
And so we call that, and I refer to it as transformational teaching, transformational as compared with translative teaching. So that's explained in the preface. And, of course, the preface came after everything was written, recognizing that, again, more explanation was needed.
I think that's a brilliant concept you're touching on here. It's very clear, and I really get what you're saying regarding transformational practices and transformational teaching. Here's a quote that I want to read that you have, and it says, "I want people to understand that the person they look at in the mirror, the person they think they are, is a small slice of the truth of being," and that's the end quote of yours. Can you elaborate on this? It's such a beautiful reminder of who we are. Can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Well, sure. Let's take a swing at that. The whole book is a continued asking and asking again of the question, "Who are you?" The idea, the understanding is that we have contracted into these personalities. We call them our egoic. It's the egoic self, who we think we are, and that in fact is really no more than the product of a lifelong series of events. Our interpretation of what's happened, our thoughts about what's happened, and who we are. The truth is that we're much more than that. Now, what that actually means is something that someone has to experience. And so here we're back again to the reason for this book. As I say often and in the book, I or someone else can tell you who you are. You know, what is the truth of you or I or anyone else? Who are we really? I can tell you that, the answer. But just knowing it in your head is unsatisfactory, does very, very little good. If you do the work in this book, if you take any transformational practice seriously, there will come a time when, like a flash of lightning, or sometimes it happens more slowly, but you come into realization, insight of something far greater than the egoic self, the little Tom Carroll, for instance.
Right.
So that's the whole business of spiritual maturation, of growing up, of waking up, is coming into actual possession, embodying the truth of who we are. And it is that primary insight that changes everything. You realize that who you thought you were, all the feelings of separation, all of the limitations, they're just simply the product of an imagination, a lifetime of imagination. And once that falls away and we begin to inhabit more and more the truth of who we are, then the life experience is entirely different.
Yeah, I concur to that. It's very much an experience, individual, unique experience, and it also is a universal experience.
Well, I'm glad you say that. Yeah, we each have it for ourselves, and we're going to experience it a little differently. However, it is the same thing, and regardless of the individual spin we put on it, there is a universality to it, and that's of course very important, because that is the truth, that it is a universal experience. That's also what you could call the validity claim, or that's what shows it to be valid and true, is that across time, across cultures, and any religious preferences, everyone has essentially the same experience. So in that way, if no other way, we know for a fact that this is a valid experience. It is universal.
I love how you wrote, how you said the word valid. It very much is a valid experience. You were telling us earlier something along the lines of, you know, this our search for spirituality, it's taking millennia. And even in today's modern, you know, in quote, spirituality, you know, mode that, you know, we're in, there's sometimes, it could give a sense of pressure, you know, I'm not doing enough. Sometimes people in their spiritual, you know, spirituality may pressure themselves. I don't know if you've ever experienced that or ever came across that, but what would you tell someone who's literally pressuring themselves about spirituality? Because it happens.
Well, I would just simply say torture yourself as long as you care to. It's not going to do you any good. And at some point, you're going to realize that this whole business of seeking is a mistake. There's nothing to be sought because there's nothing to be found. One way that I've heard it expressed is that we don't seek and then find enlightenment or awakening. We come into the possession of the truth of the fact that it already is, always has been, always will be. We simply slip between the past and the future into the eternal moment. There's all the you know, clever phrases, the koan-like remarks about the truth being closer than our next breath. And in Christian scriptures, it talks about Jesus, and they're speaking of Jesus as Christ, being closer to a brother and never leaving us. And all of these things are simply intended to speak to whoever's reading and listening in a way that they can hopefully understand that this truth that we're talking about, this fundamental fact of being, never goes away, never leaves. And of course, that's why it's true. Anything that changes, anything that comes and goes, isn't true. So we don't want to be seeking, and yet people feel the need to. But as their seeking matures, as they work through this process, you know, one of the aha moments is there's nothing to be sought, there's nothing to find, and so, you know, as a result of earnestly, honestly doing our transformational work, we come into possession of this of insight. We recognize that awakening awakens. You know, we don't wake up, we don't go searching for and find awakening. Awakening simply awakens. And even that is a little confusing to say it. It's just the fact that we realize that it's always here, always has been.
I really resonate with what you're saying regarding that there's no search and, you know, there's no destination, because if in my analogy of it, separating ourselves from it, and how you're articulating it is where if there is no search and there is no finding, that would mean we already have it. It's already in us.
It's who we are. It's just simply a basic fact. Now, I need to say, just I don't know if any adjustments can be made, but you dropped out on me for 10 seconds there. So if I don't seem to be quite connected to your questions and remarks, we're having a little phone trouble.
Yeah, likewise. I get maybe a couple seconds that you dropped off, and so far it's understandable because it kind of catches up, and we can hear, you know, we can understand what's being said in those moments that you know, we blank out for 5 seconds. Let's go to your book, The Oracle. Can you tell us, is it a practical book? Is it an educational book? How would you describe your book to people who are taking interest in it right now?
Well, I'd say it's a book that people make of it what they will. It's an invitation to answer a series of questions. And then, of course, there's a certain amount of instruction in it. There's some remarks that the Oracle makes to clarify points and guide people along their way. It starts out, though, you know, after the introductory material, I'll read the first question. It says, "And so the Oracle asks, who are you? Who do you see when you look in a mirror? Right now and quickly. Do not allow your imagination to embellish and thereby deceive. Be neither hard nor kind. Truth itself is far more helpful than our attempts to meddle. And then, lower in the page, we have these gray, faded out watermarks again. And they say, in this case, this page, write in response to all the questions the oracle asks. Who are you? And the next page, throw worries to the wind, turn within and express your intuition. Who are you? And it continues on like that. The question, who are you, is asked from a continuing series of questions in this or that circumstance. What is your experience? Who do you feel that you are? And then write, respond. And in this way, a person is required to engage with this question. And as this question over time burns its way into a person, this coupled with hopefully a meditation discipline practice, contemplative prayer practice, a person then sets themselves up to have the experience. Awakening has a chance to awaken.
This is beautiful. When you were writing this and writing down the questions, who are you, and repeating those questions, were you asking yourself those questions? Were you getting the answers in real time as you were coming, as you were, you know, coming up with these questions?
Well, interesting question. I asked them sort of based on my own understanding, where I had come at that date, to date, you know, in my personal understanding, as a result of my personal practice and work. But again, the whole book really sort of fell out of me at another level. At any given time, we actually are conscious on a variety of, let's call them, extra-dimensional higher levels. A really odd, interesting thing happened years ago in that I was spontaneously led into what's now called petitionary prayer. It's the prayer of the heart. It's contemplative prayer. Rather than asking for things, rather than talking to God as a person might conceive, contemplative prayer is more waiting, watching. And so I began to wake up in the wee hours of the morning, 3:30, and simply wait. I would find myself in a prayerful posture, and the transaction that I made was, God, I'm not going to say anything. If you want to talk, fine. If you don't want to talk, that's fine. I'm just here waiting. And the understanding, of course, is that what we conceive to be God, that's a whole topic in its own right, isn't it?
Right.
Is well aware of, you know, whatever we might be about to say, want to say, need or not need. So how silly, you know, to engage in these conversations. But instead, to link with this energy of the energy of divinity, and by virtue of spending time focused at this higher level, to rise up into the energies of divinity, therein is an opening to, or an opening of the heart, and an opening to insight. And the point of saying all of this is that in the course of doing it, I saw the truth of my heart, is the only way to say it. We're becoming more and more familiar, thanks to the work of many. The Institute of Heart Math in particular is making it clear to us that the energetic heart, as differentiated, but of course linked somehow, but different from the heart muscle that pumps blood, there's an energetic center located in the chest, and the source, it seems, of deep wisdom, great wisdom. And as that begins to open, a lot of things are found, and unfortunately part of it is rubbish and trash. And I began to understand that the process that I had undertaken was to clean out the well of the heart. I talked and thought in terms of, you know, cleaning, pulling stones out of this well so that the waters of life can flow freely. And anyone listening to me is going to hear language that sounds sort of like Christian scriptures. Having been raised in as a Christian, having come through that as a family experience, I still speak with a Christian accent and have great respect for that. Anyone understanding properly recognizes that anything that all that we find in the Bible is a clear mirror of Hindu or Buddhist scripture and text. We're saying the same things, but it takes a level of maturity to realize that all these things are being said in metaphor. And curiously, I was about to say unfortunately, curiously, it seems to be for a reason, it doesn't really guide a person to read scripture so much as it's an affirmation. As you mature and come into possession of insight, you remember these texts, these scriptures, and as if passing by a waymark, you look over and say, oh, that's what it means, and apparently I am on the path. There's some reassurance there. So here I was at 3:30 in the morning, you know, deep into this contemplative state, and I would see the truths of actions and thoughts and habits, see it in a way that was just stunningly clear. And the point of it for me was that right in that moment, I had an opportunity to say either yes or no, to own up to, yeah, I did that, yeah, I thought that. And in by simply telling the truth, admitting the truth, an energetic component fell away. It was like there was something holding there, a stuckness. And it's all I had to do was tell the truth. And that energy blew away, and I was allowed to go further, deeper into this well of the heart. And the whole picture, the whole feeling, the whole experience was of this energetic heart located in the, you know, roughly in the center of the human chest, is the source of these divine energies that we all long for. And through this or that contemplative exercise, transformational exercise, we clean out the impediments, that which would shield us from these truths, the power, the divine energies that are sort of locked up in us and that we would like to see flow freely.
And at the same time,
well, I had a further point I was trying to make, and I talked on too long there. But as a person does that work and cleans it up, then, you know, something wonderful has an opportunity to begin rushing out of us, and we then, although we're still called by our common names, we become a clear conduit for something much larger than ourselves, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful experience for the individual. But it's a great blessing for anyone around us. And this is, of course, a good part of what is alluded to in the first part of the Oracle, when in quoting Ramana Maharshi, who says that the most generous thing that we can do for the world is to do this heart work and to awaken. It's not a selfish thing. It's not a self-absorbed work. I was just paging through and found it says, or he said, Ramana Maharshi said, your own self-realization is the greatest service you can give to the world. So as we open the cave of the heart, as we open the well of the heart and allow divinity to pour out of us, it's available to the world then as we encounter other people. And the deeper we go in that, the stronger it becomes, the farther it flows. So anyway,
so much, so much truth in what you're saying. And also at the same time, with the heart being activated, being cleared out, the well of the heart being cleared out, the mind goes through transformation as well, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, you have what a friend and teacher of mine calls a philosophical re-education, re-indoctrination. That works two ways. If we, the more clearly we understand what it is that we're after, you know, what the prize is and where it lays, the more clearly, the more accurately, maybe quickly, we can apprehend, embody the reality of these things we're talking about. And then, of course, when we have the experience, much of our thinking changes radically, changing our conversation, changing our posture in the world.
Yeah, that's true. And it also changes, it could also change your environment. The people you surround yourself with may also, change.
Okay, now we just had a little drop out there, but if I understood you correctly, yeah. Interestingly enough, what has happened in my case is that people began to drop away from me as I became more and more interested in these topics. I was no longer fun at a party. So my
right.
friend base changed pretty radically.
It's incredible how, you know, we do take on this for ourselves. You know, it's in our will to go deep within ourselves, to clear that well. And it's incredible how the universe, how God just supplies you with everything, with the people falling off, the new people you're you may encounter. There could be a hidden gift inside yourself that's, you know, just awakens through opening your heart. So when I'm looking at it, I'm just kind of giving the pictures. It's incredible how we are supported once we take on this way of truthful living.
Yes, I think I understand what you're saying. We do seem to be supported, although there do come seasons, times when it seems like we're quite alone. But
right.
That's never the case. It's just, it can't be. But so we, you know, we continue to do what we do. Therein is, perseverance is required. This is not a work for the faint of heart. And that's why a person needs, and why we call these our practices, our disciplines, and however we might be feeling, we continue to do our work. We're disciplined in our practice. Because there again, thoughts, feelings of frustration or loneliness, those are just feelings. Feelings change. Anything that changes, anything that comes and goes, is not true. So if we're feeling downhearted, if we're feeling lonely, the clearer we come to understand that feeling has come and it will go, and is all I need do is continue with my practice, that's all I can be responsible for, well, it does change. The feeling does change. And then there is a new spring, a new beginning, and encouragement.
I'm going to read another quote that you have here, and I'm just going to ask a question afterwards with this. So the quote goes like this: "There's really very little that needs to be said. People have already heard it all. The question that remains is simply whether or not a person is ready to begin the work that leads to transformation." And in quote, putting on the mind of Christ, as it is phrased in biblical scriptures. Talk about the mind of Christ, the Christed consciousness. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that's the object of the whole thing, is that whether it be an intellectual understanding or preferably a deep realization and experience that one more deeply embodies, that's what we're looking for. That's what we're trying to uncover. And in having done that, the whole world changes. Our perception of who we are and what we're about changes. I'll be honest with you, I'm not quite sure how to answer the question, but people who undergo this transformation, who have the insight, one of the most important things is the realization that you're not alone. And that's mm-hmm. something of a clumsy way to say it, but you're never alone. The fact is, we are one with all that is. And so there's no way that we could be alone. And much of what drives us is fear of separation, fear of loss, you know, losing people in our lives or losing our ability to make a living, all the many things, losing our health, the many things that we could be afraid of in this world. When we realize who we really are, then we know with a certainty that can't be shaken, that there's nothing to lose. And so we come back, we come roaring back into life with great gusto and joy, able to be of service in ways that, you know, we would never have imagined. Not just coming up with clever ways to staff and fund a food kitchen, but just by the very fact of our being, what radiates from us imparts a confidence and a joy to anyone who encounters us. And in that, there's encouragement for them to do their work so that they would possess this very thing.
It's such a beautiful, I get, you know, energetically with this. And, you know, your work, your book, The Oracle, is quite a gift. It's quite a gift for people, as you know, as you're explaining it here in the radio show. It looks like you have another book called The 10 Project. Can you tell us a little bit about The 10?
Well, I dropped it. That's something that I really deeply want to write about, but it's complicated in ways that are difficult to even explain. So for the moment, for the time being, I've set that aside. It has to do with prayer and with agreement and with surrender, basic principles that are shot through this whole business of who we are and what's really going on in the world. The idea is that if we were together, a group of 10 or more people who understood what surrender really means, and if we were to come together in complete agreement, then amazing things happen. I'm going to stumble along a little further through this because it is interesting, and every time someone asks it, it helps me and clarifies a little bit. Let's take one piece of it. Why 10? Dimensionally, if you begin walking your way up through the dimensions from three dimensions of space and then four of time and then five and six dimensions, which are things that the ground at this point really of fairly sophisticated mathematicians, when you get to 10 and then 11, at 10, then something happens that is completely unpredictable, completely new. In science, scientific speak, it would be an emergent quality, and that's simply a safe way to say a miracle. Something breaks out that simply can't be predicted, but for some reason, it's good. And here again, this is one of the mysteries. Buddhists, for instance, are reluctant to believe in, to talk about God or any of these other things, because from the point of view of emptiness, then emptiness brought back into the world of form, a realization that form is no other than emptiness, emptiness is no other than form, that there really only is one thing going on, whether you're looking at the created world or this unexplainable emptiness that is full of nothing but potentiality, but profoundly empty in ways that language can't address. When those are brought together, then this is the non-dual state. So, and it should, the point being is that it should be equally weighted, good and bad. There should be no difference. What we call good, what we conceive to be bad, from that perspective, they're one and the same, and neither is to be preferred above the other. However, inexplicably, there is a slight weighting towards the good side. It makes people happy. You touch that place and you laugh from deep within inside of a person, a rich laugh and burst of joy comes forth, and nobody understands why. So back to the 10 Project as this 11th dimension, the emergent quality manifests, it's good. And again, you know, going back to the whole business of surrendering and letting divinity rush up out of the heart, what we're looking at is the emergence of the basic toroidal form, the donut, the smoke ring. It's the most fundamental physical manifestation of self-perpetuation. The smoke rolls in to the center and disappears, but comes out, comes back out the same. And the importance of this is that you have created something that is self-sustaining. So this falls then into everyone's hope. All the disciplines, all the religions of the world have a messianic hope and tradition. This would be a wonderful time for that to happen, but it's not supposed to be a one-off deal. It's supposed to carry forward. So anyway, I've kind of talked all the way around it. There are other features. It's something that I would dearly love to write, but maybe the time isn't right.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we're all on our own path, on our own pace with our gifts and in our projects. Tom, tell us how people can get a hold of you, can get a hold of your book. How can we reach you?
Well, I maintain a little website, sacredspace.org, just like it sounds, sacredspace.org. I have some articles there, and then, of course, my email address through that is tom@sacredspace.org, and email will always reach me. The book most easily is ordered through Amazon. You'll I'm a Prime member. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know what Amazon Prime is. So that means that you don't have to pay any postage. So anyone interested in the book, go to Amazon.com and look for the Oracle Guidance for Growing a Soul.
All right. Well, Tom, can you tell us what's your take on the state of the Earth? Where can you tell us? Can you see any difference in the last on the planet regarding humanity and its general awakening? Can you take us through that a little bit here?
Well, I'm like everyone else. I'm kind of all over the map and don't really know what to think about it. It's an odd time, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we look back at scriptures, they tell us, regardless of the discipline, they tell us, you know, not to let our heart be troubled. Don't be afraid. I so respect President Franklin Roosevelt and his words, whatever inspired him to say, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Now, of course, that was at somewhere in the beginning of World War II, and it was clear that he was talking about this massive destructive war that was consuming the world. But the truth of the matter is that fear is always has been our worst enemy. And now, today, tomorrow, we're tempted to be afraid of so many things, for so many different reasons. And I would simply encourage people, no, don't do that. Don't go there. To the degree that a person would take their attention, direct their attention towards divinity, as I was describing contemplative prayer, to simply wait before whatever your conception of God being empty, God being infinite, we certainly don't want to put that in the box. But the highest that you can imagine, God is a verb. God is life in everything around us, including ourselves. As we place our attention on that, the more, the deeper that we dwell on that, the more it becomes a part of us, and the more we radiate and emanate that, and the more fear is dispelled. Fear is a habit. And
yes.
I believe that it's, whether it was Hafiz or Rumi, they said, and I hope I'm not misquoting too terribly, fear is the cheapest room in the house. I wish to see you in better circumstances. So let not your heart be troubled.
Tom, can you repeat that? Can you repeat what you just said? Because we just kind of lost you there.
No, were you talking about Hafiz's poetry?
Yeah, go ahead. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, I believe the verse is, and it's part of something longer. He says, fear is the cheapest room in the house. I wish to see you in better accommodations.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, beautiful. So, you know, about the state of the world, who among us is in a position to change anything materially outside of ourselves? However, at the
right.
same time, every one of us can change our own frame of mind. And the way we do that is to engage our hearts and our mind on that one thing that is unchanging and above us all and inexplicably good. And that would be divinity. That would be God. Now, I've used this, three-letter word that will nowadays feel to be a four-letter word. But that's just silly and such a waste of time. Whatever divinity is, whatever has, life is, it's just so much easier to call it God. He, she, it, God. So let's place our attention on that which is higher than us, that which is better than us, and that which is that from which unexplainable, so deeply satisfying love spills forth in a protective way, in an inspiring way.
I like how you defined for us the word God itself, because it has a stigma. Sometimes when we speak, we do our talks.
Okay, now you just, I lost you that time. So you were saying sometimes when we do our talks, want to do that again? And I can't hear you. Hello? I hope I haven't lost you.
While we take a short break, please take a moment and bookmark our Creative Consciousness radio show here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're living a spiritually purposed life and want to connect and co-create with others in the spiritual community at large, become a member of Ultra Natural Cooperative. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter, and for more information, visit our website at alltruenatural.com, promoting awareness as a key to harmonious living. While we take a short break, please take a moment and bookmark our Creative Consciousness radio show here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're living a spiritually purposed life and want to connect and co-create with others in the spiritual community at large, become a member of Ultra Natural Cooperative. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter, and for more information, visit our website at alltruenatural.com, promoting awareness as a key to harmonious living.
Okay, looks like we're back. Looks like I also have dropped the line. So, and we're talking about Tom Carroll, author of the book The Oracle. It sounds fascinating. It sounds very interesting. And it's been a pleasure speaking with Tom. Right now, Tom, if you can hear me, we have 6 minutes left. Call in the line at 267-521-0151. And we can continue the interview.
While we take a short break, please take a moment and bookmark our Creative Consciousness radio show here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're living a spiritually purposed life and want to connect and co-create with others in the spiritual community at large, become a member of Ultra Natural Cooperative.
Calling in.
Be sure to sign up for our newsletter. And for more information, visit our website at alltruenatural.com. Promoting awareness as a key to harmonious living.
All right, folks, it looks like we're back online. We're having technical difficulties. We do have 4 minutes left. I'm going to end the show here with Jim Wafer's music. It looks like we're oh, wait a second. One moment here. Hello, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yes, great.
Hello.
Back.
I can hear you, too. Great. Well, yeah, we have something. This happens quite often on our radio show. So it's, you know, we try to troubleshoot and we eventually get it going. Sometimes sooner, sometimes it takes a longer time to come through. But anyways, Tom, it's been great having you on the show. We'd love to have you again. Tell us a little bit more about how to get a hold of you. I think your book is really worthy of.
Okay, you dropped out on me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me, Tom?
You've come back. Okay, so it's Tom Carroll. The name of the title of the book is The Oracle, Guidance for Growing a Soul. Listeners, prospective readers can find it on Amazon.com. Again, The Oracle, Guidance for Growing a Soul. You can contact me at, email address is tom@sacredspace.org. And some further writings on that website, sacredspace.org. And I believe there's a telephone number. If anybody is curious about the conversation, would like to continue, they're welcome to call.
All right. Well, Tom, thank you so much for being on our show. You're welcome to come anytime, more often on our show at your convenience. I think what you have to offer is very, very important, as well as being intriguing to the heart and the mind. So thank you very much for being on the show, Tom.
Well, sure. It was my pleasure. Thank you for working your way through the technical difficulties, and I hope we have a chance to talk again.
Absolutely. I'm sure we'll get another show going more sooner than later. Tom, thank you very much for being on our show. Folks, so there it is. Tom Carroll, check him out, author of The Oracle, sacredspace.org, and everything's there for you. Home, articles, reviews, The Oracle, shop here, about the author, comment or contact the author. Really nice website. Check it out. Incredible book from what I've seen so far and what we've heard so far. Really worthy of having a look. I think it's almost cutting edge as to getting to the point. It's a short book too, by the way, folks. And I'm sure it's very simple because in simplicity is where we find, the truth. So here we are, folks. We're closing our show. We have about 30 seconds left. You can check us out at oneheartonelovespirit.org. You can get in touch with us any way you like. We're here to offer space to people who live a spiritually purposed life, who have messages for humanity, we're here to support those people and coming forth their messages. One of the things we do is the radio show. Another thing we do also are events. And one event that we have going on right now on August 1st in Las Cruces, New Mexico, is Bridging the Gap. Many blessings to you this evening. All good things to us. Bless the earth. Let's get in touch, getting in touch with our hearts, expressing our gifts, so we can live a harmonious life with the family of humanity. Thank you.